This is the Magic Word Podcast.com.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, and happy Festivus for the rest of us, or whatever else that you are celebrating or getting ready to for this holiday season. Today we mark the beginning of the holiday episodes over here for the Magic Word Podcast, and we're going to have a special episode with a recurring guest here today. But before we do, I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in each week into listening to this podcast. I sincerely appreciate you doing that. And, you know, nothing tickles me more and gives me more enjoyment than to get the emails and the text messages, private messages through Facebook, postings and comments that are on the website about this podcast, about how much you're enjoying this episode or another. I got a lot of good compliments about the one with Greg Wilson here just recently. And so, as I have with many others as well. So I thank you guys very much for leaving your comments and for reaching out and contacting me then as well, and also giving me some suggestions. Speaking of suggestions, I had requested a few weeks ago for people to reach out to me if they have some story they would like to share that has to do with them reaching a certain age and deciding they were inspired to get involved in magic. And let me just say thank you. I've got enough people right now, so we're going to be posting that episode coming up sometime soon. So at least I have a good sampling, I believe, that we can put on the podcast here. So thank you very much. I think I've got what I need then for right now. But thank you for reaching out and responding, everyone who did, for helping with that little project. I also want to thank Tom Yates and want to welcome him as being our newest friend of the Magic Word. Welcome, Tom. I'm glad that you have decided to support us with your monthly contribution. Welcome again to the Friends of the Magic Word. And I also want to say thank you and welcome to Dan Raridan, who made a donation to the Magic Word and is now a friend of the Magic Word, too. And if you would like to find out more about how that you, dear listener, who can support us here at the end of the year as you're looking for different ways of trying to make some sort of an impact, this is always a good place to drop some of your money. And I say drop it. Actually, it's a way of investing your money, because it's investing it in future years and future podcasts and, of course, going back in the archives and enjoying many of the things we've had here over the number of years. And so whatever that you can give will be greatly appreciated this season and far into the future as well. So thank you and welcome again, Tom Yates. And this week we are going to be going back and visiting again with our perennial guest, Mr. Murray Sawchuk, who resides in Las Vegas, and he's going to give us a little rundown on kind of what's been happening in Las Vegas. It's always great to check in with Murray to find out how he's doing, and this year he's going into his second year for his second run and second year over at the Tropicana in Las Vegas. And so we talk a little bit about that, talk about also some of the social media that's working for helping to brand him as the celebrity magician, and also about some of the things that have come and gone on the magic scene there in Las Vegas. And if you're going to be coming to Las Vegas for a visit, that he gives you some suggestions also for family members, particularly spouses, who might want to go and visit some of the other sites and see some other shows. It's not all magic in Las Vegas. Certainly there is a lot to see there, but there are other things, there are other sites to see, places to visit and everything. And so he gives you a few suggestions of some other shows that are playing in town, including some static exhibits and museum and the like. So it's always a pleasure to visit with my guest this week, the celebrity magician, Mr. Murray Sawchuk, here on The Magic Word.
As in olden days, happy.
All right, well, it's about that time of the year in which it's not going to be the holiday season unless we actually go to Las Vegas and take a visit with the celebrity magician, Mr. Murray Sawchuk. Hey there, Murray.
Hey, how you doing, Scott? You all right?
I'm doing very well. Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you and all the other good things this next year will bring.
That's right. Well, there's not a Murray Hanukkah, so I can't think unless it was about rabbits, maybe Hoppy Hanukkah or something.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Maybe Sawchuk Hanukkah. Maybe that's the, use my last name for that one. Who knows, right? 8 days of Sawchuk Hanukkah.
There we go.
Yeah.
So I know that this has been a very busy year for you, and I always like to check in from year to year here for our annual visit, so people can kind of get in the holiday spirit and kind of know what's been happening in Las Vegas and also what you've been up to and so many other things that are going on that I believe are of interest to the listeners over there. First of all, now this is, you're completing your second or third year back at the Aladdin.
Well, I'm back at the Tropicana.
Sorry.
The way it worked is, I originally started the Trop in 2012, and then we did just up 3 years there, then bumped over to Planet Hollywood for 3.5, and then we just finished another year back at the Tropicana. So I guess, without the break in between going to Planet Hollywood, which is funny because, as you know, Planet Hollywood was originally the Aladdin. So I've been, I guess, probably at Tropicana 4 years in total, but this last run has been a year.
It's just been a year. Yeah, I think that might have been why I was a little bit confused there, because I remember, that the Planet Hollywood was in Aladdin then.
That's right.
From before. But I knew that you'd move from there once the Criss Angel had kind of moved over into that venue from the Luxor. We'll get into that a little bit later then, too.
Sure.
So this is just the first year. Now, is it like in December, your anniversary date?
October. I'm trying to think of the exact date, but I think it's the. It's funny, you'd think I'd know this, but it's like the third week of October. So it was. I'm trying to think. Was it October 13th or 15th? I ended up moving in there, or the 31st, but it was somewhere in there last year. So I know I can go back and look at my.
Okay, so it's just been a little over a year, since that time. Now, I noticed also that you're not always there, because I see on Instagram and every place else that you're traveling around and doing other shows nationwide, really, from different casinos and corporate events and everything then, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we all travel and do stuff. I like variety, and always like pushing the envelope, and I've never been satisfied, and I don't say that as a negative thing. I'm always satisfied. I mean, I find, great things and everything, but work-wise, I'm always never satisfied. I think if I was satisfied, I'd probably still be back in Vancouver doing birthday parties, I had a very successful business back there, and some months made more money back doing kids shows when I was a teenager, I always keep looking for the next thing, like even when I did cruise ships, I did cruise ships for like 18 years, loved it, my first cruise ship I did just when I barely turned 20, which I like to say was only a couple of years ago, but it was a lot longer than that. As soon as I got on that cruise ship, I was like, this is amazing. It was more money than I ever dreamed of making as in any career, let alone tricks for a living. But when I was on board, after I got myself situated and realized, okay, I got a 45 minute to an hour show that's not bad, it never was that great when I first started. I'm surprised I didn't get kicked off the ship sooner, but I just worked my way in there and I kept working hard, because my material wasn't that strong when I first started, doing an hour of adult material when you're 20 isn't always the easiest. And so, I always worked on the ships to look for new material to work on. So when I went back, because my goal was always to be on TV and get maximum exposure. Because I realized that's how you can sell tickets and become more popular and be more successful. So when I was on the ships, I always tried to work on new material. That was my goal. Every time I walked on stage, was to add a new joke, add a new bit. So my goal was, if I did a 2 week or a 6 week or a 6 month contract or even a 2 year contract, I had long contracts, was to get off the ships. With more material, 5, 10, 15 minutes of new material.
Do you still do that? I mean, like with your regular show now there in Vegas?
I do. There's those lulls where you get slow with stuff, but what really kicked it in the ass or in gear was, when I started the YouTube thing 4 years ago, because I had no real reason to create all the time. Because, I got 3 hours of A-B material I've done, and, that's more than I need. And it costs money and time and everything, and even the old material that I know I do well, you still got to redo it to get it good again. It takes you a few weeks to get back into the swing of something you've done for years even. So I always put new stuff in this time of year, though, June through the end of the year, because in January, that's when we shoot Masters of Illusion on CW. And I've done 6 years of it. They just got renewed for a seventh year.
That's great.
And we're shooting it in January. So I always look for new stuff because they're really good to me on the show. They always invite me to come back every year, thank God. But you got to have new stuff. And, every year it's easy to come with new stuff. I want to walk on that show with something brand new. I've only worked on it for a week or two. So I'll put it in my show, work it out, get the jokes right, and then, you know, present it, you know, half decent, hopefully, the following year. So I'm always looking for that. I'm always myself to do the next thing and come up with a new next idea. And usually it's not because I just need a new trick for my theater show. It's because I got to do something new on YouTube, or I got a talk show. And my big thing with talk shows, and I get frustrated with a lot of these magicians because they just phone it in sometimes, or they get comfortable, is my goal is every time I go on a talk show to never repeat a trick. Because we use that footage to get other gigs. So if you have me on a talk show doing the Villain Orange 20 times, well, I can't use any of that footage again. I can use one good take of it on one talk show, and then that's it, because it's the same damn trick. So every time I go on a talk show, I'll come with a new idea. And I'm not saying it's the best idea. You know, I'm not saying it's you know, earth-shattering, but right. If I put money in an orange, it might be money in a pepper or money in a can of beans or something, but just so it looks and feels different. It's a new trick.
Right,
you know,
right.
So your footage looks like more.
There was so much that you mentioned there. I really want to unpack that in just a moment, but I want to go back for a second that you talked about cruise ships, and you had worked that for so many years then as well. Now, I know the cruise ship industry is always evolving, just like entertainment business in general, basically. Do you think that it's more difficult for someone to try to get into the cruise ship business as a performer today than it was when you were there?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think now it's gone back up, so it's a little easier to get back in. But when the world fell in 2008, 2010, and 5 years after that, it was tough because of the fact that you were having really good acts that would work for $8,000 or $10,000 a show or a week, start working for $2,500 or $3,500 a week on the cruise ships. So you're getting this, you know, A-list act coming in, and all of a sudden when you get that act coming in for that kind of money, it bumps out the other acts that are B-list acts or C-list acts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which are people that worked on ships a lot.
And you're talking about illusions also, or comedy, or both?
Comedy, illusions, just being a star, you know? There's a lot of work lost on land from these big corporate, you know, corporations who had these big corporate acts that only, you know, would only walk into a room for $25,000 a corporate. Well, when they dried up, guess what? You still got to pay the mortgage. And $3,000 a week is still a good chunk of money. You know, it's nothing to joke at. If you got to work, you got to work, you know. And so you're seeing a lot of these acts that would play main theaters and tour and stuff like that go back to ships. Well, all of a sudden it bumped out the other acts a little bit, or, you know, because now here I can get this ventriloquist that only does, you know, the big high end galas and stuff on a cruise ship. Well, cruise ships, anyway, we'll take them. He's, you know, we couldn't right. afford his normal price or her normal price. So that changed the game a little bit there. And then I stayed in the ships right through all that. I was lucky enough to be locked into a few lines. And then I bumped out once it got better because I got the offer for Vegas. And I started touring and started doing a lot more reality TV. So the ships I didn't want to stay on as much because they hindered me. And so with the ships now, I think it's a little easier to get on in the sense that they're so big. These ships are huge, you know. They're, you know, they're 6,000-7,000 passenger ships, and they're amazing, but they're not a ship anymore. They're going like going to Six Flags on water. Like, you don't even know you're on a cruise ship. And for me, I'd rather go to Walt Disney World, you know, or Knott's Berry Farm, or other great resorts, and stay on land so I could, you know, enjoy the evening and not worry about running back to my bedroom that's going to take off at 8 o'clock at night if I don't.
Well, and if you're also wanting to become more well-known and popular, you're not going to do it offshore or, you know, being on a cruise ship because I've always heard it said that when you go to sea, you're lost at sea, basically.
Yes.
People forget about you, particularly your corporate clients,
yes.
And they'll go to the next guy.
Yeah, well, here's the problem with ships, too, and I love ships. So, you know, I did them for 18 years, so I can say this. I love them, but I use ships as much as they used me, meaning the money was great. The status, at least when I was on the ships, were really good. We got full guest entertainer status. I hear nowadays they're really pushing all the acts to do lifeboat drills and all this other horse that, you know, that you shouldn't be doing on these ships because, you know, your job is to do tricks, you know, or your job is to sing or dance or whatever the hell your job is to do as an entertainer. Don't make me lower a lifeboat. That's not my job. You know what I mean? If the ship sinks, I should be getting in it just like a passenger. I'm not on board to cook or to clean or to paint the ship. I'm on board to do tricks. That's it. 1 hour tricks and leave me alone. Like, let me do my job that I've worked 30 years to be good at or 40, and then just don't be a pain in my ass. And on the ships, they really are. These guys with stripes or women with stripes, a power trip on these ships. And they love bossing you around because they are over you because it's the ship's rules because whoever has stripes. And if you're an entertainer, I think your stripes are, either 2.5 or 3 stripes or something, but no more than that, or at least 2, if you really want to follow the shipping rules. Because you're on a ship, so it follows the ranks, like in the Army. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way to look at things. But as soon as these, you know, these idiots get on land, those stripes, you can have 17 stripes across your shoulder. They mean nothing. The minute you hit land, 2 steps on the ground, they mean nothing because it's a Marine status, you know.
Interesting.
And so, they work hard for that. And when you're a captain, when you're a staff captain, it takes a lot of work and time. I respect that. But don't treat me like, you know, and I've always been that way. And I got a hard edge on ships because like that, because they do treat these entertainers. Because when you come on a ship, you know, people look at you as going, oh, he does tricks for a living, he makes a lot of money. What does he know how to do? And so I said this to many times on ships, and I'm surprised I didn't get kicked off more, where I went to somebody who said that to me, saying, I can't believe you work for an hour, you know, and you get paid $3,000-$4,000 a week. And I said, and this is a guy calling bingo, or somebody, you know, vacuuming the floors, or, you know, some guy painting the side of the ship. And I go, hey, I got to deal with you. Come here. And this is what happened to me many times. I said, you know, you're right. I said, I got a cool idea for you. I only work an hour, so it's not that long. And I played dumb to it. I was a bit passive aggressive, but I said, here's the deal. I'll take you backstage. I'll give you a quick run through of my tricks. It's an hour, you know, so it's easy. It's an hour is nothing, right? You work 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day. So I'll teach you the tricks. I'll give you a quick run through. I'll give you like half an hour of my time. I'll teach you, to do the tricks. And then you got 2 shows tonight, an hour each. You got to hold 1,800 people in the audience. And then do me a favor. Show me how to call bingo. And I'll do your job for 8 hours a day, or show me how to paint the side of the ship with a brush, or show me how to use a vacuum. And, let's see who comes out at the end of the day successful on what they've learned within that 30 minutes. And I know I can vacuum within 30 minutes. I know I can paint the side of a ship. I know I can call bingo in 35 minutes, but to do an hour on that stage, I don't care whether you're a ventriloquist, a singer, a dancer, any of that stuff. It takes a lifetime to do that hour, you know, and that's the problem. They don't understand it. Because when you're not from the entertainment world and you're not from the art world, it's like telling, you know, like somebody looking at Picasso going, well, I can close my eyes and paint that thing. Well, they had no idea the passion and the work and where the art came from. And look, I'm not a fan of Picasso at all. I don't really understand a lot of his artwork, but I know it's really well done. It's historical and I can respect it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, but and I couldn't paint like him either because I don't know how he created what he did that affected the world so much, but it worked.
Right.
You know,
well,
so
let me go forward still with what you were saying as far as after we talk about the cruise ships and you talk about being on television and always working on something new in order to make sure that every time you perform on television, it's going to be a new effect and you're breaking in a few things then you're showing as well. Where do you find your tricks? So you find them on YouTube, talking to the magicians who, How do you come up with the ones you're going to use?
I always look now at what I'm doing in my career and what I'm selling is where can I put comedy into these things now? You know, like,
well, I guess first of all, it's because you know your character. You have a branded character and you know that you're a comedian, so you know you're looking for a comedy piece. So I guess that's first of all key, I guess, that a person needs to know thyself before you go out and try and find a trick to fit yourself.
Yeah, you know, I do know who I am and what I do now. It's like, it's funny, I had a party at my house a few weeks ago and James Damiere came over, you know, one of the greatest bird acts in the world. And, you know, we're friends and we're both Canadian from Vancouver and all that. And we never knew each other in Vancouver. We became friends in the States. And we're sitting around the back having a cigar or two. And we were talking about magic and Rick from the pawn shop was here and a few others. We have a little cigar club. We've got kind of 6 of us sitting around and just bullshit about life. And we're all good at what we do, I think, in our areas of expertise. You know, one's a master landscaper as well, so it's not just entertainment. And Rick was asking James how we met and said, I don't know if you realize this, but Murray, you know, with his sleight of hand, he's probably one of the best people with sleight of hand that nobody really knows. And I laughed. I said, that's funny for you to say this. What makes you say that? He says, well, that CD act you did for 15 years, people have no idea that 9 minutes that you did, you know, with your hands and the product, you know, the stealing and the manipulation with it, what you did in those 9 minutes takes a lifetime. And I forgot about my act because I haven't done that act for years. Like I totally, you know, that was another life for me, you know, and you remember because that's how we met way back in the day, you know, but I forgot that because, I did all that work and all that skill, but, I get more notoriety now because of my personality, my character, my look and what I'm selling on stage now compared to what I was selling back then. It worked for me back then. It got attention in the magic world, and I got a name in it, but it didn't get me to the world. Like what America's Got Talent did, what Wipeout did, what all these other shows did, you know what I mean, for me, Pawn Stars did, because I didn't have my character developed and what I was selling, you know. So it's funny that he said that, because I thought because I wasn't quite sure what he was saying. I wasn't sure if he was joking or what he was saying. I actually forgot myself that I did the act, you know, because it was so long ago. And I love the manipulation. I studied my life from Bobo's coin magic to, you know, all these different wonderful great acts that did sleight of hand. Yeah, I studied all the McBride's courses, all the cards.
That's very important. And whenever I give lessons and talk to other students of magic that are just getting started, they might want to do some illusions straight away. And I say, well, you need to start with learning some sleight of hand, because that there is a lot of sleight of hand that is involved when you're trying to hide something on stage. You're just not always using a big box or black art or whatever. There are a lot of hand manipulations and things you need to know that will be used in those, even if you're not using the exact manipulation, but you're going to be using the principle.
100%. And it's just one of those things where, like in my show now at the Tropicana, which, as you know, I've always invited you many times to come guest star in it, so I hope you do come, and join me one day on stage for a week.
I'm going to do it next year. I was going to try and do it here in November, and things got carried away. But
of course. No, you're always invited, that. So, but I forgot, when I'm on stage, so another magician came backstage and said, that's funny how you are so aloof to all the sleight of hand and misdirection you use in your show, because you do your comedy, you've tried to put in the forefront, which has worked, but people have no idea what you're really doing with a lot of that manipulation. I said, I forgot that most of my show, the stuff I'm doing in my show, is all goes back to my roots of manipulation. And the beautiful thing about that, like you saying, when someone's learning magic, they should learn sleight of hand, that, and which I think is true. I think to a few people, maybe it's not. Like my dear friend Franz Harari, one of the greatest, illusion designers, I think, out there, along with the Jim Steinmeyers and Don Waynes and all that. He sees this visual, and he can create mega things on stage, and he's made a career out of it, and he's done very well, and he doesn't need, he's been doing a silken thumb tip his whole life, but he's also, I look at him as a designer, not always a sleight of hand artist. So there's a few people that do get that opportunity, but overall, I think everyone's learned the sleight of hands, because it's kind of like if you play the piano or guitar, you need to learn how to do a scale, you need to know your chords,
Well, even when I look at, say, Harry Blackstone Jr., some of the things that he did with, tying a handkerchief, or different things that he would, where the handkerchief would come apart that he'd borrow from an audience member, different kinds of things, or tying a knot when he was doing a Keller rope tie, or different kinds of things that have to be a little surreptitious. So this way the audience is not going to see that he is actually doing something. I mean, he's not just making an elephant appear. I mean, you think of Harry Blackstone Jr. as being an illusionist, but there was a lot of sleights that he used as well, just as an example.
Totally. I always tell people this too. I think I've said this on your podcast before, though, and I'll say it again, but every magician will ask me, going, hey, Mer, quick question. Out of all the stuff you've learned in magic and that, what do you think I should learn for the next 6 months that would make me a better performer? And I go, take ballet lessons. And they look at me. Most of the people who talk to me are shaped like most magicians we see at a magic convention, not a ballerina, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and they're like, pardon me? I said, no, I don't. I said, I'm not into music, I'm magic, a magician. I said, I know what you're into. I said, I know what magic and, magician, musician sound the same, but I know what you're talking about. I said, go take ballet lessons. And they're like, are you drunk? I said, no, I'm not drunk at all. I said, go learn how to walk. I said, I know how to walk. I said, no, you don't. I said, some of the best people in the world, the reason you get the meeting, the reason you get the job, the reason you get the TV show is how you walk on the golf course, walk in the boardroom, walk in a casting for a movie or a TV show. The first 15 seconds before you open your mouth, that's usually when you're judged, not the 5 or 10 minutes after you're in. And when you walk in that room with that confidence, but ballet teaches you that. Or like my mom did as a kid, her mom and dad, because they're old school back in the 30s, made her walk with books on her head, so she had to keep her head straight. And that's how she learned.
Kind of funny. I was just watching the Graham Norton show on BBC here recently, and there was a lady whose name escapes me, but she was playing the part of the Queen in the Netflix series The Royal. Royals coming up. Anyhow, she was talking about how that she had to learn how to walk with more poise and delicacy, I guess, because she said she had been told that she walks like a farmer, you know, just kind of with her arms out and swinging her hips. And so she had to learn to walk differently. So acting is not just playing the part, that is, of what you're saying and your enunciation, et cetera, but your walk has a lot to do with that. And also exactly what you're saying then, Mer, as far as the confidence and how you take the stage and or walk into a boardroom or into a meeting or whatever, that it's like that guy's got it. He has confidence, you know.
Yes. Well, perfect example is I went and saw Paul Anka last night. I took my mom to see Paul Anka. So my mom just turned 80, and that, you know, Paul Anka, people laugh when I say this, but Paul Anka was the Justin Timberlake of her era, you know. And a lot of people don't realize the songs he's written and all that. But, you know, as a kid growing up, he started out young, and he learned the business. And when I find in the old days, it was really a triple threat situation. You learned how to, well, with him, you learned how to write, sing, and play. You know, everyone has their thing. In magic, I find the triple threat is a very weak link in the magic world. We're lucky if most magicians have one threat, which is learning the damn trick, you know? And we're so allowed, you know, magicians, you know, and I've said this before, and people can quote me, magic is the only form of entertainment you can buy to be talented, and no other form you can buy. You can't buy a trapeze artist set. You can't buy a violin and know how to play it. You know, you can't buy a ballerina outfit and put it on, and, you know, but you can buy, you know, a cutting finger chopper, and in about 2 minutes you can go do it. You know, it's the only art form you can buy, and that's the problem why I think we have so many crappy acts in our business, you know. And I'm not saying everyone's crappy, but there are, you know. I've been a crappy act. I can say that, you know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about.
You know, yeah.
Going back now and further than you were saying, as far as choosing the tricks that you're going to be doing on television, obviously that you are booking the TV shows in order to put butts in the seats, so this way they'll come out then to see your show there at the Trop. So the how do you go about booking a television show? In other words, obviously not being paid for a TV show, because publicity is going to be something in which you're trying to just get an audience to come in and see whatever you're going to be doing. So you first of all have to have a goal. That is, if you're going to be having a show coming up that's going to be for the public, then you should then start trying to generate some way of selling more tickets. And that one of those ways is trying to find the TV show or talk show or radio show, or, you know, the newspaper doesn't work so much anymore. A lot of things you could do, I guess, in the social media. But as far as television show, how do you go about trying to find those stations?
You mean, so basically the question is, how do you get on TV when you haven't been on?
I guess that's basically it. How do you get on TV?
Well, you whore yourself out, you know? That's what you do. And what I mean by that, for every listener in the classy sense of it, is I mean, you make yourself exposed, and in the good way. You know, you make sure everyone can see you and hear you and find out about you, and then find something really important about yourself that you can brag about. Even if you got to stretch it a little bit, you still got to meet it, but stretch it a little bit. You know, win something or do a cool show that maybe there's somebody there that you can grab onto their tailcoats. Meaning, and I'm talking about small, you know, say you're from the small, like we've all been in a small town at some point, and some are still there and some aren't. But when I was at home in Vancouver, Canada, you know, I'd go and try to get on the news with a new trick. And so I'd look at Christmas and I'd go, oh, Christmas is coming up. Maybe I can pitch the news station doing a little magic at Christmas with the weatherman, because the weatherman's always the comedy of a news team. Because let's be honest, news teams
true.
Always so dry. They, you know, they're just so, you know, but the weatherman's always that funny guy or the man on the street guy. You know, there's always every news team in every city has that. And then pitch thing, you know, anytime through the holidays, could I come on and do a little magic of the Christmas, and let me do a weather thing, and I'll make it snow, you know, because we've got the snow trick, you know, and the old snowstorm in China. And so you do a little snow thing with the weatherman, or maybe you take a copy of their news paper that they're reading, newspaper, their script. And I know they have teleprompters. They always have that piece of paper in front of them, and you can rip it up and put it back together. But you try to find a way to cater to them, to make them want to use you in there, because you're not famous. You're not Tom Cruise. So you want to figure out a way, why would they want me on the show? Well, if I can benefit their show to make it a little more entertaining. So holidays are a great time to get in on that and try to get a little exposure, you know what I mean? And use your local things. Or if there's a local star in your town that you can jump on and do a trick with and do a video and put it up. You know, you know, you always got to pay it forward. You know, I always say fake it till you make it. You know, I'm still doing it, you know.
Right, right.
But I think that's the way you kind of jump on things. And then write letters and ask to be on. Most people don't ask. They send stuff or they brag about themselves going, I've done this, I've won this, I. Well, that's lovely. But if I own the TV company or I own a sitcom or I own a TV show, I isn't going to help me. But you say, hey, Murray, say I was, you know, Chuck Lorre, who was part of Friends, I believe he produced that show. And
he did the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, Big Bang
Theory. Three and a Half Men or Two
That's
and
right.
a Half Men.
So say I was doing Big Bang Theory. And I'm not a big enough star to go on there. And so how would I get on that show? I'd write Chuck Lorre and say, hey, I had a great idea. Have you guys thought about doing this thing where, you know, one of the characters thinks it's a science because that's what they're based on. But in reality, it's actually a magic trick. And two of them, you show how it's done. But the one lead character, which is the tall guy, you know, he really believes there's no way we convince him that it's not a magic trick. But he believes it's science, and that's the whole hook of the episode. Well, that would sell. You don't need to be a famous person because the magic is going to sell that episode more than who's going to come in. Yeah, they may end up calling Penn and Teller or Copperfield at the end of the day, but that's how you find a hook because now it's a benefit to them because they're going, wait a minute, this is an episode. So I want you now. That's interesting. So how do we get this working? So you try to sell the benefit of them using you, not the benefit of you using them on how great you are to be on the show. I've won this many awards. No. You go, I can do this for your show and make it really popular. You know what I mean? That's how you get into certain things with TV and that. And that's one of my biggest hooks on how I get on TV. I don't sell me. I sell them.
Well, I guess that's true, like with Pawn Stars, when you're on there, that you're trying to not necessarily sell you, but you're trying to help their show by validating some of the things that they are looking at to say this is authentic.
Yes, 100%. You know what I mean? Exactly. And I'm trying to help them out. That's the idea. You know what I mean? So that's the key. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, talk about Las Vegas, since that you are there, I'd like to kind of find out what's been going on during this past year. Some of the people have kind of come and gone. Again, you've been there at the Tropicana for a year. So I know that there are always a couple of acts that kind of come in and then they leave. And it's like that. I think Shin Lim had a larger room that he tried to open and close, then open later in a smaller 300-seat venue or something.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure where he was originally going. I know he came into the Paris with ADT, which they always do for 2 weeks, which is a normal thing. But now he's over at the Mirage, which is about a 1,200-seat theater. And he splits the bill. So he does half the show. I have not seen the show, but this is from what everyone tells me. He does half the show. And then Colin Cloud, who's from America's Got Talent, does half the show. So that's what he's doing over at the Mirage. Now, I mean, coming right off America's Got Talent, personally, I have a very hard time sharing the stage, you know, because right. This is his moment to shine. And he's really the star. He won. So, but I can only think the only reason he's sharing the stage is because you got to do an hour and a half of material. And we go back to that theory. Doing 90 minutes is not easy to be entertaining. And I love Shim's stuff. He does some really cool stuff with the cards. But how many times can you flip cards, pick a card, find a card? Because that's really his world.
Well, that's true. You know, you look at the Matt Franco show. He has made a living, certainly, of that. And has been able to transcend the smaller things into some larger effects.
Yes.
And has got a really good show that I've seen. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Matt's wonderful. And he's always likable, you know, and his tricks are varying, you know. Like, you know, any show you put together, it's like a singer. You know, if you always sung ballads, you probably fall asleep. You know, you still got a couple get a couple of songs in there that are upbeat. So even with magic, you know, you really got to, you got to have that variety within that hour or 90 minutes. So he's over the Mirage now. I hear he's been extended through till June on various weekends, which is great. You know, he's right off AGT. He's a great looking guy, good magician, you know.
And is he there like six nights a week, or do you know?
No, it's just like weekends. They're varying. So he'll come in. He'll come in from like a Thursday through Saturday or something like that. And Terry Fader will do Sunday through Wednesday, but it's not every week. It's like 1 or 2 weeks.
Oh, it's in the same theater where Terry Fader is.
That's correct. Yeah, gotcha. Most of the Boys to Men in there are in there as well. You know, and when they do Aces of Comedy there and stuff like that, they'll have, you know, Ron White goes in the theater. Sure. And they just do it in one. And what I mean doing it one, for those people who don't know, it means they do it in front of the main curtain. Mm-hmm. You know, so they keep Terry's set closed and they just work in front of it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what else has been happening out there?
Well, let's see what else. Hans Klok opened. He opened about, I don't know, 6 months ago. He's over at the Excalibur, you know, from Holland.
Yeah, because he had come to pretty big fanfare a few years ago, and then closed.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that he's back.
Yeah, he's there doing, and you know, the stage, you know, nice little room there, which is the Thunder from Down Under room, which is the male review show. So he does the early show, and then Thunder with the boys from Australia, they do their show after in the evenings. It looks great. He's got an LED wall behind him and stuff. His tricks are massive, though. I mean, these tricks should be on the size of stage that Copperfield's working. But he squishes in there, you know, and he's got like four dancers or six, and he's selling it, wind blowing the hair and that. And, you know, I always tell people, Hans, that, you know, if I was a young kid starting out magic, like 5 or 7 years old, watching Hans Klock, I'd be like, you know what? That's a magician. That's a real magician, you know, because he sells everything like a real magician. Wind blown in the hair and the dramatic jumps off things and the poses and all that. It's great. You know, it's wonderful. You know, it's not my style of magic, but people like it and it's entertaining. He's made a great career out of it, you know. So, you know, and then we got, of course, Copperfield across the street over at MGM, and he's still, you know, just rocking it, you know, and always creating new stuff and different things. And then we got Matt King and Nathan Burton still around over the Miracle Mile shops. And then what else is down the street a little bit here?
A little bit further on down, of course, you've got our mutual friend James DeMare.
James DeMare, yeah, well, he's moving. He left the Thunderbird.
Going to the Mint, that's right.
He's going to the Mint now, so he's
is that on Fremont Street?
No, no, and the Mint used to be way back in the day, but the Mint now is right off Sahara on Las Vegas Boulevard. It's right by the Golden Steer, a very famous Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis hang back in the day. And so that's where it's just a small bar kind of club. So he's doing a show there. And actually, cool thing is he's actually doing my Christmas charity show in December, December 20th. He's going to come in and do a little performance, along with Feeling West, Lance Burton, and Piff, are the magicians I have this year in my eighth season of Begging for Magic. And all the money goes to the dogs, literally, you know, for the rescues and the non-rescues.
Right.
But yeah, so he's in there. Further down, though, you got Mike Hammer downtown at the Four Queens. He's got a solid show, very funny, very aggressive and wonderful. He's, you know, he's like Don Rickles. Is his kind of muse, I believe, you know.
I do love Mike. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very
wonderful.
Unique, and he books some, you know, solid shows, and people come back dozens of times just to see him.
Yes.
Because he's very spontaneous, you know, just
impish. Mm-hmm. And then Tommy Wynn just opened over at the Oyo Casino, O-Y-O Casino. Basically, if you have never heard of the Oyo Casino, that's not a bad thing. It just opened about a month ago.
Where is it located?
It's the old Hooters Hotel.
So
it's right across from MGM. They just basically covered it up and changed it to the Oyo. Hooters is out of there. And Tommy Wynn's in there doing his show 4 or 5 nights a week. I haven't seen it yet. But he's a dear friend of ours and the family and all that. And he's having a family too soon. He's having a kid in 3 or 4 months.
That's
with
great.
His wife, Stacy. So, yeah, so it's exciting for him.
And
so
Chris Angel, I guess, is still working. Then,
yeah, he's still over there at the
Planet Hollywood.
Planet Hollywood. I just read in the paper this morning, though. I guess he got snubbed with Kelly and Ryan. He was supposed to be on their show because they were in town last week doing their show from the Paris Hotel. I believe it was the Paris Hotel. And then they ended up putting Matt Franco on for some reason. Something happened, but it was in the paper. I guess he got snubbed, so I'm sure he's not happy with that. So.
That's funny.
But it's what it is, you know. What are you going to do?
I just wondered if he's still doing his Raw show on the road, you know?
I hear they're still touring with that. He brings a few acts out there with him as well. You know, and I think he's figured out how to tour a little bit better, because back in the day, he used to tour with all these big trucks and buses. And I don't care how famous you are, it's all about your overhead. He wasn't making money. You know,
unwieldy,
what I mean?
Yeah, as I recall.
Yeah, you know,
hearing.
So now he's figured out where I think he's downsized it by at least 50% and, you know, putting more money in his pocket, which is, you know, that's how touring works. You know, like I said, I saw Paul Anka last night, and, you know, when he was performing, it sounded like he had a 36-piece orchestra, and he actually did, because he was playing the track, not his voice, but the musicians were playing the click track, and he really had about 8 musicians on stage. That was it, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about overhead.
Now, is Amazing Jonathan performing much or at all out there on a regular basis?
No, his show's not here anymore. It left years ago, you know, because of his health issues and everything.
I know that, I've seen the documentaries, and it sounds like, I know he's been coming back a little at a time, and I just wondered if he was strong enough to try to come back and do another show.
I don't know if he would be strong enough to come back or not. I'm not sure, you know. I've toured in the road many times where he's played, you know, and he's come in to town, and, you know, he hasn't been on TV for so long. And he hasn't, you know, the problem is business now, you know, there's so many entertainers every week, every day, from the reality TV that's on, from America's Got Talent that's on. If you're not in front of people every week, every day, they forget about you. I don't care how good you are, you know, and it's all about ticket sales, you know, and I think because he's been away, you know, he's a legend, you know. The guy's in the 80s and 90s, he was the king of magic and comedy, you know.
Right. Well, obviously, so. Penn and Teller and Piff the Magic Dragon has have popular shows.
Oh, Piff's awesome, yeah. He's going to be in the charity show with me as well, and he's over at the Flamingo. You know, and he always does a Christmas show, usually, and I assume he's doing it this year as well. And then Penn and Teller, they're just awesome. You know, they're always putting new stuff in as well. And so, yeah, so he's, they're still rock and rolling over there as well. I know, I think they're touring a little bit this fall or winter, but they're there as well. Because I know, as far as I know, I think Teller was getting something work with his back again, you know, from what I've read and seen.
Yeah, when I was at the Genie convention, that Penn and Teller were booked to be there, but only Penn showed up, and Teller was actually there on a Q&A through a Skype video call. And they'd said that he was, having some back issues and having some therapy and was unable to travel. So
yeah.
I understand that. Well, were there any shows that opened and closed earlier this year in Vegas? You can think of?
I'm trying to think. I mean, shows open and close here all the time. You know, I'm just trying to think. Well, I mean, Donnie and Marie closed after, I think it was a 10 or 11 year run to lots of fanfare because, you know, because they're legends, you know, and they went out with the big, and supposedly they're not going to tour or perform together again, which is kind of interesting. So it'll be interesting to see if that's
well, long and line. I'm glad you mentioned that because people who go to Las Vegas or who are listening to this program, of course, want to see magicians, but a lot of times their spouses or family want to see something else. So what else do you recommend? I mean, obviously, there are a lot of other shows. What have you seen? You mentioned Paul Anka there last evening, but other kinds of sightseeing things that you would recommend?
Well, the newest show to open in town is getting a lot of fanfare. I think it's going to be really good. Is the Atomic Saloon, which is basically from the creator of Absinthe and Opium. Absinthe is at Caesar's, Opium's over at Cosmopolitan. But then it's the newest show over at the Venetian, which is in the old theater where they used to have a show called The Act, which ran for about 10 months or so. And it's a really cool venue. And it's got these great variety acts from Europe and that. And they're the best in their league. And it's just a great you know, environmental show where everything's happening around you within the show. So you feel like you're really a big part of it. That was another show I haven't seen yet, but I hear it's great. It's over at the SLS Hotel called Blanc de Blanc. And it's another show where there's, you know, people flying in the air and acrobats and all this stuff, which is pretty cool. And then another show over, which I did see over at the Stratosphere called Celeste. It's basically like a Cirque du Soleil show, but it's not. And it's got some great acrobats. It's got the knife throwing act from America's Got Talent. It was phenomenal. Alfred, he's unbelievable act. So there's some really, really cool shows that, you know, that have opened and stuck around and they're hanging in there, which is, you know, in this world, it's all a game, you know, in this business. We always talk about, people always ask me, how's your show going? I go, I still got it. That's the truth of it, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, yeah. Aside from that, I know there are other kinds of things to do, and one of them being the Neon Museum or Graveyard.
Oh, yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
That's my favorite place. I love the Neon Museum. It's you know, it's basically all the old neon signs of Las Vegas that used to be there. You know, the Sands, the Sahara sign, the Stardust, all even the old Tropicana sign from the original when the Tropicana was built. And these, you know, these are signs that are iconic. And I always tell people, they always ask, why is that your favorite place or thing to do in Vegas? I said, because it's the only thing that you can do in Vegas you can't do anywhere else. Like, you can go eat at a Gordon Ramsay restaurant in almost any major city, you know? You don't have to eat here in Vegas, although there's great restaurants, you know what I mean? But the Neon Boneyard, it's not moving, it's not going on the road, it's locked and loaded, you know, it's just sitting there, and it's something that you can only get to see in Vegas, and it doesn't cost that much, and it's a really cool thing to see the signs, and they light them up. Now, they got different night shows where they do video mapping on some of the signs, and if they bring the signs back to life via video mapping on what they would look like and who would actually be on that sign, whether it be Liberace or Sammy Davis and that, so it's a real cool thing to do.
That's kind of cool. As I recall, that's kind of near the Strip or off the Strip just a little bit, too.
It's off the Strip. It's downtown. It's towards downtown by Cashman Field. So if you're downtown Las Vegas and you go north on Las Vegas Boulevard another mile, it's on your right. So it's right down there.
So I found it's important that you're going to need to go online to get reservations.
Well, yeah, well, with the reservations and that, you know, back in the old days, you really had to go online, meaning you had to go online and reserve, like, a week ahead because it was really a locked compound. It wasn't a tourist facility. Like, you could get tours and you gave them 15 or 20 bucks to go in and they'd meet you at the gates. They unlocked them and you got to walk around and take pictures. And it was a nonprofit, still is, but it really was, you just walked around and saw these signs stacked upon signs, which I gotta be honest with you, I kind of liked it better because you were really seeing something that really was in Leon Boneyard. It wasn't set. Now it's set up really pretty and the things are put right, which is good because you want to see the signs right and some light up even, you know what I mean? So it's really done like as a really nice museum now. But in the old days, it was pretty cool walking around kind of finding those gems where you saw the Sands sign buried behind the Stardust sign because they were really just a, it was really just a junkyard for the signs to hang out in, you know, and it was kind of neat to see their final resting place untouched, you know.
Right.
But now you can go on book tours like anywhere. You know, it's a business where they're making money and they got to make money because they put money into it now, you know, and they got a nice paved parking lot and they, La Concha, which is this little motel that was near the Peppermill, they actually took the check-in desk of the La Concha, which is a very famous art design. It's got these kind of teardrop, upside-down teardrop kind of windows. It's very iconic. That's their main check-in for the museum now. And that used to be the check-in desk for the La Concha, which is just kind of between the Riviera and the Peppermill, two very famous places on the Strip. But they took the whole building and moved it there, and that's their check-in desk. So it's pretty cool. It's definitely something to go see. It doesn't cost a lot, and, you know, it's cool.
That does sound pretty cool. Well, by the way, that you know, I feel as if that, and I've talked with several people about this, being in a new golden age of magic and with a lot of clubs and different places that have opened, and I wanted to kind of really refocus and change subject for just a second to something I know that's probably pretty near and dear to your heart, and that is the Marvin's Magic.
Yes.
That has opened, that Jeff Hobson has been involved with out in California. And with Marvin Roy being your mentor and fatherly figure there, too. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, it's a project of Jeff Hobson's and then another gentleman who had another business prior to that who wanted to open up a magic club. They just love magic. And Jeff's always been wonderful because he's, you know, from doing what he's done on the ships to the illusionists and all that stuff. And, you know, he's one of Marv's boys as well, you know. And I think I was one of the youngest ones that Marv ever helped, you know, at the end of their run of doing what they did, Carol and Marv. So I got very lucky to get in that tail end of it, you know, because I know he helped Jeff Hobson a lot. He helped Mark Kalin a lot, you know. And so this club's a really cool supper club. You walk in, very Magic Castle-esque in the sense that, a more modern Magic Castle-esque, where you walk into a magic shop and say a magic word, a door opens, you walk in, and as soon as you walk in, you see this beautiful bar underlit with a dark blue with top hats as lights hanging down like chandeliers would, but it's actually top hats with lights in them. Very cool. And then the big center picture is his famous picture of him lighting a light bulb by himself with his hand over his head with the sunglasses, which is phenomenal. And then he's got a couple of quotes on the wall, and it's a very chic, very, very cool kind of bar area. The whole bar goes across the front, the back when you walk in, but as you walk in, it's in front of you. It's a nice piano to the right, wine cellar and everything else, and then you can walk into the theater, which is right behind the bar. And the theater holds, I don't know how many holds, I want to say it holds about 100 or maybe 120, I might be off a little bit on that, but it's a really nice cabaret theater. It might even hold 80 to 120, but every seat's a great seat. And it's a performing arts center style of theater, meaning the stage starts where the first row of seats start. So there's no 2 or 3 foot, you know, lift up of a stage. The stage is right floor level when you walk in. And it's a cool looking venue. Me and Marv, and I brought my mom along, was there about a month ago to see. We got to see Tony Clark perform. And then, of course, Jeff. Jeff hosts every week because it's his club. And
is that in the Los Angeles area?
No, it's in Palm Springs. Right in Palm Springs, right in La Quinta, which is actually, it's actually about 10 minutes from where him and Carol lived last. In there, they lived at PGA West, really nice country club thing. And now Marv is in an active living home where they take care of his meals and everything. And it's just because it saves him, you know, cooking and cleaning. He's, you know, his mind is as young as a 29-year-old. It's unbelievable, you know. And he still walks fine. He's got a cane, but he's still there. Like, he's really on it. You know, like when I sit down, he even brings up YouTube. You know, he says, oh, man, if I had YouTube when I was around with Carol and I. And he gets it. Like, he's not a – this is what I love about Marv. He's 94. And most people I meet at that age or any age between, I don't know, 60 and 94, they're jaded. Oh, it's not like the old days. Oh, well, nothing's like the old days, you know. And I even try to stop myself from saying that because I'm getting to that age now where, like, oh, it's not like, you know, when I was in my 20s. And because he never says that, because he's always, and I think that's the reason he worked so long in his life and was so successful, he accepted change. And he accepted the next thing. And that's how he kept his act and, I think, working for so long, because he just accepted it, learned, and then moved forward and just didn't sit around and bitch about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's how I became very successful. So I've really tried to look at that and not be that jaded person and try to, you know, look at the next new thing and not be upset with what's happening. Just kind of go with it and learn, you know?
Well, and so I know also that you have worked at some of these other clubs we're talking about there, one of them being the Smoke and Mirrors Club over in Nashville. I think I saw that you were there a while back, too.
Yeah, House of Cards. House of Cards.
House of Cards, sorry, yes.
Nashville. Yeah, Joey is working that, the guy who ran the door at the Magic Castle for so many years. Yeah, he's the entertainment director there now. And what a great club. You know, I had a great time performing there. You know, the theater that you work in would be equal to, like, the parlor theater. You work at the Magic Castle, so it holds about 75 people, 70 people, and a real nice little theater. Everyone's got a great seat, and as soon as you walk in, you know, it's a copy of the Magic Castle, you know, to a T almost, you know. And you walk in a secret door, all that stuff, no pictures taken, got to dress up, you know. And the food's delicious, the bar looks great, they got a piano that plays. They have a nice little outside area where you can sneak through this tunnel. And if people want to smoke a cigar or a cigarette out the back, it's a really nice little environment that you don't even know you're in the back parking lot because it's got trees and nice couches to sit around, you know. It's got a couple of close-up magicians who are phenomenal in the back corner. There's two little areas where they do close-up magic. Like, you'd almost see it, the Magic Castle, you know, down by the Divergent table where they have it, right, or down in the back area where the palace is, you know, by the old bar down there. It is wonderful. It's a great, right, place. I loved working there. And Nashville is unbelievable. It's like I said to somebody when I was there, I said, Vegas has to take a page out of Nashville's book because I think Nashville's winning. I mean, that one main street, which is called Broadway, with all the neon on the bars, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there late at night, there is a really vibrant nightlife. With everything going on, it just seems like almost like Bourbon Street, I guess, in a way, with the doors open,
yes,
and music playing out of all these places
and
very thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no cover charges. You just come on in and you have a beer, and the beer is like $5 or $7. It's not like Vegas where it's $15 a bottle. They want to charge you $40 to get in. You know, you walk down that, and the thing is, the talent they have in these bars. Like, when you go down to one bar, there's like five bands in one bar,
right,
five live bands, and they all could be Toby Keith or Garth Brooks, you know? So it's really a cool environment, so.
Yeah, I think they're all trying to be found, basically.
Of course,
you know,
they are.
Yeah. They're in Music City and thinking, okay, well, somebody's going to be a producer who just happens to be walking by and say, let me listen to these guys a little more.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So.
You know, and it happens, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times you've got to make your own luck, and that's what you've been doing. I know that you've been using Instagram and continuing to do that, and on YouTube that you, last year when we talked, you had gotten 1 million subscribers, and how many do you have now?
We just hit 1.6 million. A couple of weeks ago. So I think it's 1.6 million 30,000 or something like that. So it's pretty amazing. You know, it's pretty unbelievable how it's kind of caught on, you know.
Right.
But people don't also realize it wasn't a fluke. You know, we work every week on it. You know, I was just out in LA last week shooting, you know, 6 to 7 videos, and it's a lot of work. You know, these ideas on my YouTube channel, some are good and some aren't. You know, when you're putting out 1 or 2 videos a week, you're going to get crappy ones, you're going to get brilliant ideas, you know, but the idea is to keep that consistency up and keep putting out something and to keep the algorithms up and to keep your presence known. In this day and age, that's kind of where it's at with this. You know, I get a call every week going, hey, I want to sit down and have coffee with you and talk about a YouTube channel. Everyone does it. And I thought, all right. And they go, well, you know, I got this idea, you know, and it could be anything. And I go, great. And I said, so what do you think of the idea? I said, I think it's great. I said, but you have to do that. You need 52 of those great ideas a year, minimum, if not 104.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at least 1 a week, 2 weeks, minimum. It's like, wow, really? I said, well, yeah, you can't just do one and take 4 weeks off. This is a job. It's like going to work. You got to go to work 8 hours a day, and you cannot stop, or it's not going to work, because it's like pushing a big ball, not down a hill, but on an even plane. Well, you're going to push the ball, and if you just let it roll, it's going to stop. But if you keep pushing it, once it gets rolling, you're just going to have to tap it every so often, and it's going to keep going. But once it stops again, it's going to take you a long time to get that big ball rolling again. And that's exactly what YouTube, Facebook, Instagram's like. You know, and Instagram, my Instagram's okay, but I've never really put any effort into my Instagram. I've just posted stuff because I just post stuff. But my Facebook and TikTok, which is this, you know, this new app, the last year's been out, as well as YouTube, is where we, you know, it's a job. It's not, we're not just doing it for fun.
It really is. You know, I had spoken with Xavier Spade, who has, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands or millions, you know, of subscribers, and he'd give me a few tips. And just with a couple of things he'd said of using some hashtags, it more than doubled, you know, the people who were liking things on Instagram. And then he, next time I saw him, he said, well, okay, now here's another thing that you can do. You can tweak these pictures, and here's how you can edit and do that to kind of make them pop, you know, to make people, you know, stop and take attention. So, you know, really, there are some secrets to Instagram likes.
No, exactly. It's a huge thing. It's a game. Like, my Instagram is, you know, somebody said, Marie, why don't you just take the same videos and put them on Instagram because you'd get the traction. And I would. You know, it's a different format, so I got to shorten them and edit them and all that. And I know it would go well. I just got to, you know, we have over 4.5 years of videos. So I could, we have the footage. It's just a matter of editing it. And I have thought about that, or bringing somebody on to do it for me, because the nice thing about the stuff we do, it's not vlogging. You know, we're creating scenes. And the greatest thing about our videos is we relicense those videos out weekly to different TV shows, different media platforms, because they're scenes within themselves. People who vlog every day, and for people who don't know what that is, vlogging is basically a video diary. It's like a journal, and it's a day in the life of. Well, a day in the life of, you just follow me running around cutting my trees, fixing a car, or jumping in a big pool of Jell-O. There's no sense. No one wants to really license that to air somewhere else, because it's not going anywhere, really. They're fans of you and your life. So that's the difference between vlogging and creating a scene or a video or a prank. And the bonus of creating a prank or something like that is that can be licensed over and over and over again, which we license a lot of my videos every week. And it's also a residual income, you know. So it's a big difference. But vlogging, is, you know, so it's a different
thing. And that creates
thing.
Additional streams of revenue, which is very important as well. I highly recommend to every magician, you know, not just put all your eggs in one basket, that meaning that you just don't make income from your performing, but just have these other kinds of revenue streams. And it takes a while. You just have to get out there and start doing something, you know, and on a regular basis, as you're saying, like with YouTube, just like with this podcast, that many years ago, I mean, I was just kind of doing it irregularly. And then once I started posting everything just on Thursday mornings, then you start to have more people who are following because they know something's coming out on a regular basis, you know, when it's going to be out. So I'm sure that's very important then with what you're doing as well. Now, is TikTok something that you're continuing to use? Is that a really growing platform?
Yeah, TikTok is the newest one out there. There's other ones out there, Twitch and a few others, but TikTok is the one. TikTok, for those who don't know what it is, it's basically the main angle of TikTok is where, say there's a famous singer out there. It could be from George Strait to Cardi B to whoever you listen to, Justin Timberlake, and they have like their catchphrase, their chorus, their song. It's a snippet of like 11 seconds of their song or a rap thing. And it's their voice, it's their music. But what you do is you lip sync to their voice, and you can wear stupid clothes. You could do a stupid dance. Me and Danny, my girlfriend, did one on hers where we're doing this little dance in our bathroom. We have a big mirror and a couple of just cheap paintings behind us that I got from, I don't know, Bed Bath and Beyond. And so I'm in a boxer shorts and she's in her robe or something like that. So we're doing this little dance thing. So we watch the ones that everyone's copying. And then what you can do is you can slow it down. So say the song is hip, hip, hibbity hop, and you don't really know how they say that. Mm-hmm. They slow it down, so you record yourself half the time. So they go hip, hip, hop. You can say it and see at the same time, so you don't need to memorize what the lyrics are.
Oh, okay.
And then when you hit play, they do it in real time. So it looks like you know the words. It's really a cool. So that's why. And it caught on with kids who are 4 or 5 years old, because kids can't remember all the stuff of these new songs. But if you just the words come up like karaoke, you follow it. And then when you speed up quickly, it looks like you're singing Dolly Parton 9 to 5. Like, it's really funny. It's just a cute little, it's just a weird thing, but it caught on. So I did this thing where I'm dancing with Danny, and of course I'm dancing backwards and looking like an idiot. And of course I fall back into the wall, and the painting comes off the wall, falls on me. And that's the end of it. It's just a stupid thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's what we love. We just like seeing, but on my TikTok channel, because I don't want to go away from my brand, I've done magic tricks to music that are 11 seconds. So it could be ripping a paper, pulling a mouth coil out of my mouth, putting a bottle into a paper bag, vanishing it, you know, lighting flash paper, producing a card. So because they're only 11 seconds, so it has to be quick. And I'm doing it all to music just because that's the format. I don't want to change that because people like it. And you can talk on there, but it doesn't go as well. So you just download a song that's allowed on there. It's all, but it's very easy to use once you get into it. Okay. And it's a fun format, and it's kind of fun to do. Cool. And and that's it. You know, you could even do one for your, you know, what do you do? Your martinis, Thursday martinis or martinis?
Yep. Magical Martini Thursdays, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. So you can do that and just have done to music with you doing something funny with an olive and a glass of, you know, and every time you sing a different song with it, Johnny Cash or whatever, and mm-hmm. you'd be surprised. You'd get some funny, funny viewers, you know.
So, like the idea.
Yeah, why not?
Well, as we start to wrap up over here, that I do want to for you to pitch the things you got coming up again in November 20th.
Yeah, so November 20th here in Las Vegas at the Tropicana Laugh Factory. It's my eighth year doing it. It's called Murray's Begging for Magic, and it's a charity for a nonprofit rescue, which is Friends for Life Humane Society, where I've rescued all my long-haired chihuahuas from. They have much more than chihuahuas, but I just, that's my dog of preference. And all the money and profits that go from that show go to them to buy blankets, food, and everything like that. It's a nice way to give back. It's the holidays. And this year we got some great magicians on it. So we have Demare, who's James Demare. We got Lance Burton, Piff the Magic Dragon, myself, Fielding West for magicians. You know, there's also some other singers joining us there as well. So it's an hour and a half show. It's being co-hosted by my girlfriend, Danny, and I, who is also the host of Crazy Girls here in Las Vegas.
And that's going to be held where again?
At the Tropicana Laugh Factory, where my show is.
Yes, and that's going to be one show only, afternoon, evening, or what?
Yeah, December 20th, 5 o'clock show. You know, you just buy tickets online, come check. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be fun to see all these different acts. And let's be honest, two of the greatest bird acts, Lance Burton and James Demare, in the same show. They're not doing their bird acts, you know, but it's kind of cool to see them both on the same stage, you know. And then also throughout the year, you know, I'm touring a little bit in December. December 8th, I'm going to be in Phoenix. At Comic Strip Live, which is a comedy club with Lefty. And then over in California, I'm playing December 14th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. And then the next day after that, I'll be in San Francisco at the Cobbs Comedy Club, which is one of the coolest comedy clubs in the nation, that Sunday, December the 15th. So, and then, of course, I'm back in Vegas at Christmas, New Year's at the Tropicana Laugh Factory. And, of course, doing YouTube videos and a bunch of stuff. And I think I'm, you know, filming an Italian movie in December as well. So there you go. Because I'm so Italian. Look at me.
Well,
I'm not.
An Italian from Canada.
Exactly, pretty much. Exactly.
That's right. Well, Murr, sounds like you've been very busy, and I appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us here, because I know that you've got to go here shortly for your afternoon show today. So before we close, you have a magic word you want to leave with us? What's your philosophy here?
I think a magic word is stupendous. I think when you wake up in the morning, I want you to feel and pretend that you're stupendous, whatever that means in your life. Be stupendous, because it's a cool word, it's fun, and life's too short to get too dramatic. So enjoy life.
That sounds great. Thank you, Murray. I appreciate
it. Thanks, God. I love you. Merry Christmas.
Love you, too. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Murray Christmas Sawchuk from Las Vegas. This is Scotty out.
Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
Well, as always, thank you very much, Murray. I appreciate you being my guest again here this year, and also being my friend for so many years, and I look forward to many more years of enjoyable friendship with you. And I also encourage those who are traveling Las Vegas, be sure to go by the Tropicana there at the Laugh Factory and see Murray's show when you are in town. I know that you're going to enjoy it. It's a good afternoon show, and it's lovely. It's good for the whole family. I also want to encourage everyone to subscribe to our pod letter. If you're not already a subscriber, be sure to go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and you will see a place where you can subscribe, or there could be a pop-up that will come on the page, and just sign up for the newsletter or our pod letter that way. This way you know not only who's coming up this week, but also who's going to be coming up next week, some suggestions from the archives, as well as giving you first dibs on getting to know about a contest that's going to be coming up. We don't have anything right now going, but if you are a subscriber, you'll be one of the first to know. And as I mentioned also about having something from the archives, one of the suggestions that I had made this week was for you to go back and to listen to the episode that had to do with the Christmas Carol. It was called A Magical Christmas Carol, in which that we had the voices of a lot of different magicians, I'm sure that you'll recognize, who played the parts of various people, including Ebenezer Scrooge, who was played, I'll tell you right now, was played by Mark D'Souza. very well. Man, you know, when people hear him, they say, is he a professional actor or he do this on the side? I mean, he just has a great voice, and he was great as Ebenezer Scrooge. So anyhow, you can go back and listen to that episode. It's a good one also to have the family gather around the old time radio or whatever way you listen to your podcast and let them listen to the Dickens Christmas Carol, Magical Christmas Carol as it happens. Well, I think that's probably enough for this week. We are going to get ready here for next week's episode sooner enough, and the holidays is rapidly upon us. So hopefully you've got your Christmas shopping done and your Hanukkah tree already trimmed. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to go out and be stupendous. This is Scotty out.
And have yourself a merry little Christmas now.